now. Broadcasting from the City of Angels. Los Angeles, California. Metal.
You're listening to The Sheena Metal Experience with your host, Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
That's right. It's the Sheena Metal Experience right here on LA Talk Radio. For more info on the show, latalkradio.com, sheenametalexperience.com. Don't forget to email me and let me know what you think of the show and to call and talk to us live. It's 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. My next guest is a very successful author. His specialty is UFOs and aliens, a topic I know all of my listeners love. His new book is called Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls. And I just peed my pants. Please welcome to the show the very talented, making his debut on the Sheena Metal Experience, Nigel Koerner. And Nigel, it's so great to have you here. And I have to say that, you know, not a lot of things scare me. In addition to this show, I also host a paranormal show. But I went to your website and there were creepy images of grays and I got a little scared.
So do I. Every time I look at it, I get scared myself. But I hope to describe these things in not too daunting an aspect, Sheena,
right,
as the time goes on for your listeners.
What is it about the grays that creep us out? I mean, I think that most people, probably more so in the UK than here, because, you know, we are the descendants of Puritans here, but a lot of people in this country believe that there is some life on other planets, and there's many images of what they look like, from, you know, big scary insects to little cuddly things like E.T., but there's something about the face of the gray that just kind of strikes fear in the heart of every human.
Yeah. Well, in a sense, I suppose one has to take these things very seriously. But I think when you remember that the grays really are not living things in the sense that we're living things. They are really what I would call roboids. They're really artificial, synthetic creations, really. Rather like we send out, you know, to space to do research for, in cosmology, we send out the robots to space to look at various other places and so on. So they take the dangers mainly. We're doing that now quite seriously, actually, in various stages. I think that you really have to look at these things, even though they look bizarre. They really are kind of designed for space travel. And because they are synthetic, inasmuch as they are that kind of thing, they're pretty dangerous to humanity, and the fact that these things are here and are being hidden on this planet is something I'd like to talk about, and kind of involves the research I've done over the last 30-odd years, and I'd really like to tell the story of all of that if possible.
Absolutely. Now, do you believe that the grays are they robots sent by some other kind of organic creature that inhabits a planet? Or yes. Are they actually now the creatures that inhabit the planet?
Well, the point is this. You know, recently it's been discovered that if you look at our galaxy, which some people reckon to be made up of 100 billion stars, and if you then look at the numbers of planets that might be around these stars, the numbers increase in huge proportion. And they're now saying, and these are experts in cosmology, they're now saying that these planets that are there may well be Earth-like, and they estimate something like 100 million habitable planets. And in those, there may well be life, and we don't know if the life forms are anything like ours, or they may be different. But the fact that there are 100 million of these planets implies that this business of making technology happen and so on must be very pervasive just in our own one galaxy. And when you think that cosmologists estimate there are trillions of planets in multi-billions of galaxies alone, space is a pretty crowded place, and if you do that proportional jump, you know, from our galaxy to the rest of them, we have a big, big deal going on here, and obviously technology from theirs may well, in some kind of time and space, if you like, pervade our own planet, our little planet, which we like to think of in this cozy kind of way. And the point about it is that In the past few years, particularly since the 40s, there has been so much evidence to say that something very, very strange is going on. And whilst the I have to say the title of my book isn't really of my choosing, it's really from my from the imagination, if you like, of the publishers. It really, this whole thing is about the genetic conspiracy to actually work on the natural biology of humankind that interested me most of all and has brought me to the conclusions that, in fact, has taken me about 37 years in terms of the research I've done, 37 years to come to these conclusions and write the books that tell the story.
Right, because, you know, the Greys, the folklore around the Greys, and much of that may be true, but the rumors that people that don't research like you do hear is the Greys come, they kidnap people, they experiment on them. You know, we all laugh about the anal probe, but, you know, it's real people. And yeah. Then they're harvesting eggs and they're harvesting Absolutely. Semen, and they're doing either cross geneticizing us with them or with something else, and that they may even be the missing link that cross geneticized us, you know, that's the link between, you know, when we were apes and now.
Right. Well, this is the fascinating thing about it all, really, basically. But let me say this. Through my researches into the UFO phenomenon, I discovered, you know, that there is a natural an obvious connection that ties what we know as science and religion and philosophy together in the most intriguing and some might say bizarre way through these things. You know, it defines the entire kind of existential, you know, the general how are we here, who are we kind of outlay in such a way that it answers the age-old questions of who are we? Why are we here? Why the universe itself happened in the first place? And they do this in the most spectacular way when you actually have this ingredient of what we call, commonly call the Greys. Now, I don't think we should really get very scared in the sense that they are, you know, like demons and that kind of thing. Really, this is a very science-based ethos that I'm talking about. And if you look at it really cleverly, you know, or try to look at it in terms of connecting up the dots. Why are these things, these discs seen by so many people? What, in fact, are these UFOs? Why are they on this planet? Why are they here for so long? The evidence in terms of, say, petroglyphs on some caves, for instance, in Australia, go back 40,000 years. These things, in fact, are seen depicted in paintings in the 13th, 14th, 15th centuries, you know, the actual references on in canvas to things actually riding, things that look very much like flying saucers. And in fact, there is one very famous one that overlooks the scene of the Nativity and so on. And going back, you know, to medieval times, quite an intriguing thing, this whole story. And of course, I came to it quite innocently, in fact, when my 12-year-old son asked me the question, Dad, are UFOs real? And of course, to be honest, I mean, I'm science-soaked in my background, so to speak, and I was really not inclined to give him a serious answer. And of course, we all, you know, we've been through the old Buck Rogers. I don't know if the girls do this, but I'm certainly the boys did go through this Buck Rogers, Star Wars, all that kind of space-type stuff and so on. And one doesn't really take it all that seriously. However, my young boy at the time, who was 12 years old, he's a pretty well-stitched-up individual and likely to get back at me if I gave him a frivolous answer. So I thought maybe I'd do some research into it and have a look. I came at this, I have to say, Sheena, from an extremely skeptical standpoint. Obviously, you know, science doesn't admit that really anything can go past our own kind of scientific expertise.
Sure.
And we've been at it for 200 years and got, you know, what, a few thousand miles an hour. But these things that are seen by experts go at 25,000, 30,000 miles an hour. And they've been seen by astronauts and pilots. It's got to the stage now.
Okay, so you believe that they are actually, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Nigel, they are actually traveling from somewhere. Because, you know, and a lot of people are now saying that they're crossing through dimensions and that's how they get here so quickly.
Yeah, well, you can talk about all kinds of ways of representing them, all kinds of aspects and so on. But I am dealing with the solid reality you and I confront in our everydayness, so to speak, and even looked at it from that point of view. And that's really the thing that a lot of people will relate to, be they coming from dimensions and the land of Og and all the rest of it. Well, you know, we've all seen The Wizard of Oz and things like that. Extremely difficult to kind of take that in any real perspective, if you see what I mean. But what I'm saying is we've got people like Ed Mitchell and Gordon Cooper, astronauts, who actually testify and verify these things as real physical things that are here, and are here in such a way that it seems rather menacing, because they obviously don't want to be found out to be here. And, of course, then you've got the stories of all the people who have been abducted and so on, and all the terrible experiences that these people go through. And this kind of thing does really, you know, demand an explanation. Of course, we're not getting it. It seems to be there is some kind of, I don't like the word conspiracy, but I have to say there seems to be some kind of conspiracy in the mainstream to keep this particular thing, this experience of humanity, as covered up as possible. And that is another thing that drove me, as I went into the research over the years and so on, to look at this more precisely and more sharply, so that people wouldn't say, there, I'm out with the fairies, so tooth fairies, so to speak, and so on. And really, I was the most surprised of all, because coming at it as a skeptic and then discovering that this thing is not just real, it is so profound and it is so pertinent to our lives, that something needs to be said particularly, and it came from my 12-year-old son originally, the question, as I said, particularly if your parents, what on earth is the repercussions of all of this to future generations, you know? And that kind of thing, as a dad, drove me on to look even more deeply at this thing. And the more I looked at it, the deeper I went to it, the more spectacular were the results, and the more sensational were the results, can I say, to the point where I've written 3 books to account for the whole phenomenon. And, of course, you'll appreciate I can't talk about all the subject matter in the 3 books. It really is written in a kind of sequence, so we can connect up the dots, and at the end of all of them, you can actually see what the whole thing is in front of you, kind of thing, you see. So that's really the story I want to say. How do I connect up gray aliens with soul? Sounds bizarre. And how does this bizarre connection actually make logical sense? I hope to be able to get you some way through that tonight.
Oh, I'm so excited. I'm just sitting here not even saying a word. I'm just listening to you. Okay, let me ask you a couple of preliminary questions. Do you believe that the Greys have always come here, even before human beings were human beings, that this is a planet that they have consistently visited on a regular basis?
Well, you put that very well, Sheena. In fact, you put that quite brilliantly. In fact, the most telling revelation that came up in my researches was that these guys are responsible, I believe, for the genetic manipulation of humanity and the production of what we call Homo sapiens sapiens, modern man, to this day. Now, that sounds incredible, doesn't it? But let me tell you, when I looked and I was very careful about the construct of all the evidence I gathered, and looking at this, obviously, from the science point of view, I just didn't want to believe that what I was seeing. But if anyone cares to do the research in any kind of depth, I think they will soon find out that we're onto something here that is so significant, and that the very nature of our own species is, in fact, in terms of a consequence, the production routines of a highly intelligent, roboidic entity that for some reason came to this planet, and I hope to make, I actually make that clearer in the book. I don't know if I'll be able to take the sequence of events that might strap that particular point together tonight. But let me say that some kind of mechanism brought these entities here, and they discovered, if you like, a kind of being, human being at the time, which they studied. Now, I think, you know, if these things were, in fact, an alien effect on our planet. You would expect them to want to know what on earth's going on here. What are the species? What are the threats? As we would want to know if we went to another planet ourselves and so on. And I think what they did discover was that here on this planet was something called living being, which was different to them. You must understand the real central point to all of this is that these things are roboidic. They are actually machines, but highly sophisticated machines. There was actually just last week something on the TVs all over the world showing us a soft tissue creation by some Japanese science-based company that produced a robot that looked, to all intents and purposes, exactly like a very pretty woman. And it was bizarre how uncannily real this thing looked. Now, that's obviously this particular thing could only open its mouth and say some rudimentary sentences and so on. There was no intelligence behind it and so forth. But it was chilling to see this particular thing shown. And, of course, can you imagine our technology, as I said, is 200 years old. Now, that's a very, very short time. Imagine a civilization that might have been going thousands of years, and they produced something like a robot to do their utility services, as we do in car factories and so on to this day. Robots produce a lot of the vehicles, for instance, and do a lot of the kind of, you know, the work that we as human beings would rather not do. And can you imagine a civilization that would make such things in order that they might be relieved of all the kind of, you know, harder tasks of life and living and so forth? And that these things then were, if you like, given artificial intelligence of a very high order. And then they were sent out to look after not just the people, the beings of the planet, but to see what the dangers might be outside the immediate planetary environment and so on. Off they went, and they looked for dangers, but they'd have to be programmed, you see, to look after not only themselves as robots so that they can carry the task out, but also to see what dangers present to those that created them. Now, the thing about robots with artificial intelligence is you have to define to that robot exactly the difference between the creators that are organic, living, naturally living things, and themselves, because a robot with high intelligence is not going to know itself as itself. It's a machine. It's a program, you see. Now, what happens if that machine that's told, look after yourselves at all costs, and also, therefore, because you can do that, look after the planet, you got a problem here, because they're going to see, finally, that the biggest danger to them may come from the created beings. And who's to say they realized this because they had this artificial intelligence and, shall we say, took out their creators at a stroke. And off they went wandering through their program into the universe, still investigating blithely, so to speak, you know, all these things that might be out there, all the dangers and so forth. And part of that brief might have brought them here to this planet thousands and thousands of years ago. They come across a strange but living mechanism called a primitive human being. Let's say the precursors to Neanderthals. And then they find, for instance, that these things can actually carry on reproducing themselves automatically. Now remember, Sheena, that these are machines, and they will break down in time. They break down because there is such a thing in this universe, in physics, called the second law of thermodynamics. Now, that sounds really science and difficult, but it's not really. It simply says that all things in time go into greater states of chaos and randomness. And that simply means that everything rots. And I think you'll find, if you look around easily, that everything goes one way. Everything actually breaks down and rots. Now, the thing that's doing this is the second law of thermodynamics. And this law is universe-wide. So it would affect everywhere, including the planet of the robots and so forth. And now these guys have a big problem. They come here and they see, wow, this primitive type of man that may not even have invented fire for all we know, they can produce, they can reproduce. Things come out of them called little ones and babies, whatever. And their technology is so far in advance they can actually trace the life course of these beings. They can trace their biology. Not only can they do that, but they can see what death might be, and if anything survives the state of death, and maybe comes back again after the state of death. So we're talking about very, very sophisticated procedures that this mechanistic machine has got answers for. Remember, it's highly intelligent, super intelligent, if you like, far greater than our exponents of intelligence and so forth. I'm sorry to go on like this. Forgive me.
I feel like I'm sitting around a campfire. So basically, the Greys are robots that went rogue, killed their organic masters, and now are traveling the galaxies and the universe, still playing out the original program that was put into them when they were built. So they're carrying out the mission, but they don't really have a master anymore.
Absolutely, because you see, they've been programmed to do this, and they'll simply slavishly follow the program. They don't know anything. They don't have a mechanism called compassion or feeling or emotions. They're just following a program, and they each bit of information they gather, they add to their program. It's called a quantum computer type mindedness. Highly, highly intelligent, highly sophisticated, always able to construct new things out of what they have learned everywhere and so on. But the one thing they can't figure is, what is organic life? What is this living beingness? How does that work? So they set about looking at it. And when they do, they begin to realize that living things like us, or species that live naturally, come and begin with the universe. Because you see, as we've got moms and dads, granddads, grandmas, and great-grandmas and great-granddads and so on, going all the way back to the beginning of the universe in a single line. A line that goes all the way back to the Big Bang. It has to be, if there's an ancestral mark like that, you know, that of continuity. And this is the big deal. They think, wow, these things begin way back with the start of it all. They would have to. That's what a programmed, highly intelligent being would be able to learn from us. And if that's the case, we have something wonderful to our nature, which we take for granted, really. We don't realize how magnificent this ancestral continuity really is. And it goes right the way back beyond perhaps the beginning of the universe, because if it goes to the beginning, there has to be something before the beginning, if you see what I'm trying to say. Now, you know, I had a great difficult problem here, because here am I, reconsidering, if you like, how we look at all these things that go back and to the point, what's the point at the beginning of the universe, what does the universe mean, and so forth. All of that had to be researched, and then what might have given rise to that previously and so forth, and have some kind of idea of what that might be. And I believe that these roboids, these greys, as we call it, they realize something incredible has happened on this planet, that they want a piece of the action of, if they could amalgamate themselves somehow with this incredible thing we call a living, naturally living being. And I think that they have been spending all this time on this planet carefully nurturing us to a point where maybe they could slip their program into the thing that makes us work too. But in order to do that, that have to reconstruct us, that have to make a new model of what they found, so that what we call our DNA might be adjusted, so that they might actually fit into it. And I think this is what they've been doing millennia after millennia, till they get a suitable jump-off point into us, so that they then can piggyback. I don't know if you're aware of this phrase. It's a very English thing, you know.
Oh, piggyback?
Piggyback.
Sure.
Yes. All right. Fair enough. And they piggyback into our aspect, our living aspect of being. And then they have something they're hoping might continue automatically life and death, and maybe return from death. You know, I don't want to get controversial about this, but in looking at all of this, I had to read all the ancient texts about religion and all the rest of it and see how the whole thing works. So you see, my point is that these things started with the universe and came the natural living beings, the pre-Neanderthals, if you like, they had an ancestry that went beyond that into the past and so on. So we come down from right down this line to our present individualities. And this line that begins with the universe is what I call a soul. Just simply the line of information that makes you and I now in our individuality is really a soul. And it's nothing magical. It's just how all that information that I have gathered in me now and you have gathered in you now, all of that, and every single individual human being has this line. And that's simply what I call a soul. So what you can see how I'm trying to connect this thing up with the title of the book, Grey Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls, is, I think, their intention. They're here to somehow amalgamate their own psychosphere, such as it is, mechanical though it might be, superior as it is, to our own. And if they did that, then I think the repercussions on each of us is catastrophic. And that's really what I want to say in the books. Take a look at this. My theory may well be wrong, but I would challenge you to look at it and fault its logic and come up with something else so that I can breathe a bit easier at night.
Okay, I have a question.
Sleep a bit easier at night.
were the Greys, do you believe the Greys were part of our initial geneticism, our initial gene splicing? Did they make us in the first place? Or did we just naturally evolve?
Yeah, I think they look on us as a technician would do a lab rat. I think through the centuries, through the millennia, in fact, we have been looked at by these entities as something to work on and to refine so that they themselves may have a situation where they can be part of this. And they then can reproduce without having to make themselves up or to manufacture themselves. Because as I said, the second law rots everything.
Right.
And by continuity, they give themselves a kind of physical immortality, Sheena. And that's the point that I'm trying to make, and I want people to understand this is a big deal here. And if these things are here on this planet, and if they, with their intelligence and so on, in their mechanical intelligence, can be technological superior to us, they may be making us into something more like them so that they, at some stage, can actually match with us and be commensurate with our functioning. And then we will end, and they will begin in us, if you see what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
And so we have this business. Yeah. Sorry.
No. Okay, so I get
it. I don't want to
So you believe that we as human beings are just organic, and we naturally evolved in our organic evolution, and that's what got us from primitive man to where we are. The Greys have been watching us and experimenting on us, but have so far to this date not gene spliced us. But they're planning to, because they sort of have, they can't really have babies, they can only make, and they're fascinated.
Yeah.
Because it seems with the experiments they do on people, that they're fascinated with our reproductive systems, our respiratory system, our digestive tract, and our brains. And I guess that those are all things they don't have. They don't breathe, they don't eat, they don't vacate waste, they don't reproduce, so they are trying to figure out how we do all of those things.
Yeah, well, you see, if you look at the way the world is moving now, it's rather disturbing. You're absolutely right in what you say. The real danger is what might be happening to us. Now, you ask if they actually have gene spliced us.
Yes, so far.
I'm absolutely certain they have. They have through the centuries done this. But they haven't done a complete job. That we are evolving just as they, in their own terms, are devolving down, if you see what I'm trying to say,
right.
to the end of their own particular, mechanical mechanism and so forth. And then they have to recreate again, remanufacture again and so forth. But we do this naturally. We bring progeny in all the time. Now, as I said, this would be a wonderful thing for them to have. And whilst they gene splice us in order to bring us up more into a mechanical frame of reference so that they can then be part of us, we've got to see where the signs are that this might be happening. And just look around us now, Sheena. We are becoming, I think, rapidly something I have written in an article and called SIM card man. You see how they're asking us to be more and more bionic. They want to slip things into us to make our biological function ostensibly better. But all the time, this rapidly evolving technology seems to be taking us into less and less human stances and more systemic stances.
Right.
And that, to me, is a very profound indication that whatever they might be doing, they are, in fact, trying to make us change over time, piece by piece, a little by little, into a gross analog of themselves. And I think that that's another thing that we have to take a great look at the moment. Just how far will this business go? Will it be that one day a tiny little chip can come slipped into us, into our bloodstreams, that will control everything about us, that will substitute for our biology, but has the hidden agenda of being able to match us into some circuitry in a roboidic entity that is alien to our natural being, that can't have feeling, that can't do as we are in terms of those things that mark us as compassionate and so forth. But in order to do this, they would have to change certain features about us. And maybe they could put in features in us that aren't naturally part of the human kind of cascade down from the beginning of the universe. Maybe they are responsible for all those negatives that make us wicked and evil and hurt each other,
right,
and have racist attitudes and all that kind of thing in the world and
right.
so forth. Because that then would ensure for them a compliance, perhaps, with their own hard-bitten attitudes, things that they can't help because they're machines, of course. I don't think these things do these things with any deliberate wickedness. But if they make hybrids of us, then we are an amalgam of some of what they do in order to make us suitable to them, and that might include terrible things that humankind can do to one another. Whilst we can love and bring things together, we can also hate and take things apart, and that's the big deal that I want my children to look at and study. And I'm really glad my son asked me the question, are UFOs real? Because it seems to me it has absolutely turned upside down my entire ethos, you know, as a father and as a human being, in trying to find the answer that I could give him that wouldn't embarrass me.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, do you believe that... Well, I agree. First of all, I was going to say that earlier in the hour. I agree very much that I think that some of our traits that are so almost robotic come from something being spliced in that's not, would not have been the natural evolution of our species on this earth had we been totally left alone. Do you think that there are human beings on the earth that they communicate with, you know, not in a, oh, I grabbed the farmer, butt probed him and put him back, but that they're actually in relations with that may be helping them along?
I can't have a feeling that there might well be, Sheena. I can't have a feeling that this is the natural drift. If you look at look in any kind of comprehensive way at what's going on in the world today, I think most reasonable people will see that something very strange is going on in the changing aspect that is happening to all humanity around the world. And if it's going to go at any kind of pace as it seems to be going now, then we have it seems to me less and less time to say war there, boy, we just don't want to go there. This is enough is enough. Let's take a look at all of this somehow and find a reason why this is happening. And if these things are here, and the funny thing is the mainstream does not look at them, Sheena, and that really does bother me. You know, we get in Britain, we get if the royal family has a toothache, it's plastered on the front pages of every paper.
Sure.
And here's a situation where some of the most distinguished gentlemen in America, those chaps who appeared recently at the Washington Club, the Washington, I think it was called the Press Club in Washington, they stuck their heads on the line, so to speak, and said, look, hang on a minute. This is true. This is real. I have these credentials. You've got commanders in the armed forces of America, people who are trained to notice things, sitting there and making this assertion, making these statements. Yes, we had a report of it, but now it's all gone. It's erased. And yet what they were saying was of such immense significance. You would have thought that every single newspaper on the face of this earth would have been playing this thing up And whilst, you know, our recent report of the marriage of the royal family, the Prince William and the royal family might be of interest, I can see, to many, many people in the world, I don't think it equals this at all, to be honest. Whilst sapphire rings and all the rest of it are really a small portion of the significance of what these people at that press club in Washington were saying. And no one seems to take it up. There seems to be a complete shutdown in terms of the value aspect to us all of what these gentlemen were saying to us. And there, more will come out. More people who have been working perhaps with organizations that hide these things, and they would be expected to do this because perhaps genetic engineering and some form of thought control has been used by these creatures in very powerful places to keep them hidden from the sight of the general populace. But I tell you, if we can understand that our capacity as living beings has such wondrous potential, right, if used properly, of course, and I think that that's where you come, and my book goes on and to connect up with religion and so on. By the way, I have to say that I'm a religious skeptic in the sense of organized religion and so forth. I bear no kind of, you know, affinity with such a thing. But I have looked at all the great statements of the past because I had to tie this into a complete ethos in some kind of way. If I'm talking about strange beings coming in working on the biology of humankind from the inception, so to speak, of the universe and so forth, then what place is there for those people who speak on spiritual matters and so forth, who have made great and logical sense in the past? And I'm talking about the main teachers that have founded the great religions and so on. And whilst they may well be right in their pure statements, I think humankind and whatever might have been put here as interceptional agents through the aegis of these things may well have distorted that and turned the whole shebang into something that it wasn't meant to be. And I think that one of the most interesting things, and I don't want to go too much into that at this moment in time, but I will mention this now. I think the most interesting thing that recently I was actually instrumental in going to a seminar for world scientists in which they looked at this artifact left on this planet by a being that lived 2,000 years ago, a chap called Jeshua Ben Yosef. And this man, otherwise known as Jesus Christ, seems to have left a little piece of cloth with his body impression on it, and it's causing a great deal of interest all over the world in scientists with neutral values looking at it. And I was at Frascati in Italy recently, where a medical doctor friend of mine delivered a symposium dissertation on this. And it is an absolutely incredible thing that this particular artifact could be presented as the resurrection modality of this being, because it's a burn on this cloth. It's a burn with coded information in the picture, the only one in the world with distance coded information. This is quite a miraculous thing. And I started off with this business as well as a skeptic, and looking at the various bits of evidence through the years, I am totally convinced that this man, Jesus Christ, for instance, left something absolutely wondrous to tell us what special things human beings and living beings are. That the most important thing about us is to meet the potential that he manifested as an example for us to follow. And when this piece of cloth, and I'm absolutely certain it's going to be proved to be absolutely genuine, if this thing is what it seems to be to many scientists looking at it, this is the verification that we are extraordinarily special. Ordinary though some of us might think ourselves to be, we are extraordinarily special in real potential terms. And if some artificial artifact from out there in the universe, in all that traffic out there, comes here, happens on us, runs its program, and perhaps unintentionally in a way, tries to amalgamate with our potential to be what Jesus Christ was trying to show us in the Shroud of Turin, and I'm referring, sorry, I should have named it, the Shroud of Turin, then we have a big problem, because that thing points to the eternal scale of our power, that we carry on, we don't end, we keep on and on and on. We have our own real, true eternity as natural living beings, and these things are trying to sneak in a temporal type of, you know, continuity, a halfway house, so to speak. And what if they interrupt any of our individual eternities with their shenanigans? That's another big deal I want my children to consider, and another reason why I wrote the books and so on, just to give them a chance to make their choices based on this kind of thinkability, if you like.
Yeah, well, and you know what? If they can splice DNA the way that you think they can, and they can do genetic experiments the way you can, maybe they'll take a little piece of the Shroud of Turin and put a little Jesus in all of us, because we sure could use that.
Well, I think he may well have done that while he was alive, you know. And there's another controversial thing. Maybe he put into, if you like, the genetic body politic of us all a certain magic ingredient that interferes with any of this gene-splicing nonsense and their intelligences commanded, that the actual Greys might have commanded. Do you know, there is a very, very, there's a very great example that might actually allude to a real direct connection between Christ and these robot Greys. If you remember, I don't know, Sheena, if you remember, there's a part of the Bible that says, the New Testament that says, Christ was taken up to a high place. It's called a temptation. And I don't know if you're a Christian or not, so I'm saying this, you know. Christ was taken to a high place, and he was supposedly tempted by some being called Satan or
right.
whatever.
Right, sure.
Yeah, and that in this whole scenario, he was offered a great deal. He was offered, in fact, the world if he would bow down to this character they call Satan, whatever, and worship him. Well, obviously, this character seemed to know that he owned the whole world to be able to give it to Jesus Christ. There's an implication that I've always wondered about. But even more intriguing was the fact that Jesus is said to have been taken to a high place. And from that high place, he was told to jump down and that angels would save him. Well, Jesus again rejected this request. And then the third thing was made where he was taken to a high place where he could see the cities of the world. Now, that's a very intriguing thing, because there is nowhere or no high place on the face of this earth that you can see the cities of the world. However, if you look at a map of the world where all the populated areas can be in a, say, a two-dimensional, from a globe, you turn it into a two-dimensional sheet, and you look at a portion of that sheet that covers all the kind of land masses of the world, you know that Judea and Jerusalem comes almost in the center. And if outside, this is geophysically true, by the way, because they've done research on it, if you move to a spot just outside that area and you go straight up in the sky, you will be able, at 2,000 years to go, to see all the main cities of the world. So the implication might have been that these Greys were there and took Jesus Christ up to show him the cities of the world in what? Perhaps a UFO or a spaceship, because that's the only place you could see all the cities of the world from, so to speak. So here we've got another very interesting thing in Christ's retort to him, "Get thee behind me, Satan, for it is written, you shall not tempt the Son of Man." And I think in those words, perhaps, this wonderful, beautiful Jew was telling these things, listen, you guys are less than insects. You don't even know you are machines. And of course, you can't tell a machine it's a machine. How do you do that? It doesn't have a sense of individuality because it's running on a program, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So, in the end, you put all this together, and I, you know, I came to the conclusion, and this is my surmise, I came to the conclusion that maybe Jesus Christ and all he did was in fact pointed to giving us a warning that we are going to have to deal with things like these artificial android robots, whatever, that in the future time would come to our planet and threaten the eternal well-being of us all.
Wow. I don't even know what to say. It all makes sense. And it makes you think about so many other things in the process. And, you know, when you think about artist renderings of Satan and artist renderings of Greys, they're not too far off.
Not too far out, are they?
They're little and so, skinny, you know, and
empirically, it's rather difficult to prove this empirically. But I tell you what, if you've got enough of these if you've got enough anecdotal evidence going on for so long by so many, and all the evidence that you can actually look at, when you don't look, by the way, at the idiomatic representations of the holy books, you go back and look at the things that they threw away in the past, things like the Nag Hammadi Codex, the Pistis Sophia, books like that, where conveniently, a small cartel of human beings hijacked the great faith, Christian faith, and put in there what they wanted to be there so that they could control populations a little bit better. When, in fact, the great author of it all, in the Nag Hammadi Library, for instance, in the second apocalypse of James, Jesus warns James of beings who take away souls by theft. Now, you couldn't say that more precisely. And so, you see, there is this incredible thing that we all have to look to, that we are not the things we think we are. And most people in the world are suffering. Most people in the world feel helpless and so forth. But intrinsically written in all of us is the potential to be gods. There is, in fact, a reference in the New Testament that Jesus actually asked someone, "Don't ye know ye are gods?" And maybe through the centuries, these things came in, these androids came in, these robots came in, and interfered with this wondrous legacy. And that really is something worth asking questions about. Now, look, I may be wrong about all this, Sheena. I have to admit that these are all kinds of put in as, look, suck it and see kind of thing. Look at it.
You know, you just opened up the secrets of the universe, and then you said, suck it and see. I'm not so sure, Nigel. Now I'm having some doubts. It's the Sheena Metal Experience, LA Talk Radio. Quick break, and then we're back with much more of the fabulous author, Nigel Koerner, right here on LA Talk Radio, where we've now had our souls ripped out, and everything has been explained to us, and we've learned that the answer truly is suck it and see.
Listening to The Sheena Metal Experience with your host, Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's the Sheena Metal Experience right here on LA Talk Radio. For more info on the show, latalkradio.com, sheenametalexperience.com. Don't forget to email me and let me know what you think of the show and to call and talk to us live. 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. My guest all this hour, Nigel Koerner. He's a fantastic author, and his new book is called Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls. And I'm actually surprisingly and gladly hearing new theories that I hadn't heard before about what the gray aliens are, what they want, and why, Nigel, they probe us in the butt. And I like to hear new things, because I think when you study this, you hear a lot of the same old questions over and over again that there aren't any answers to. And it's nice to hear a new theory, and a lot of your stuff I've never heard before.
Well, neither did I till you came up with the evidence to back it up. And that's the problem, is that you can't see past it when it's staring you at the face with reason and logic, and you all I've done is really stitch it together, Sheena. That's all. Nothing more than that. And I really want to say something, you know, here and now. I really don't want to preach new meanings to anyone. It's just simply the act of, I suppose you might call it, an act of love from a father to his family and his children and people he loves and everybody, really, in a sense. And I don't want to claim that I'm some great, wonderful, whatever. The point is that it's intriguing. And I'm much more resolute in chasing up something that means something and can be stitched up to mean something. And then some subjective fear-loaded paradigm or whatever it might be. And I know people are well-intentioned and all the rest of it. But, you know, back it up with as much empirical logistics as possible and then look at this and see all the ways up, down, sideways, north, south, east, west, if you like, and see if it stands up over time. See if a neutral look at things might give you a fresh stance of a vision, if you like, in your life and so forth. One of the things I'd like to say, if I may,
please,
is, you know, I get a lot of letters about from abductees and so on asking how I would explain their predicament. And I've looked at this very carefully, and I really here don't have any didactic answers to this, but I'd say this much. Looking at the evidence as I've looked at it over 30-odd years, and really it's been an exercise of painstaking research, looking at things every which way I can, so that I could actually ask the devil's advocate question as well and see if things stand up. I've come to the conclusion that these abductees have nothing to fear at all, quite simply, because the people that these things are doing all this to, if they are chosen to be looked at by greys or whatever, it's because there is a problem, and that abductees present the greys with a problem, not that they are something special and luscious and wonderful or whatever to the grey manifest, but they really have a problem with these people. I think the greys wouldn't touch those that they think there is no problem with. But I think an intelligent being would always look at something that provides the problem. And I think they may have some ingredient to them, abductees, that give the greys a challenge. And so they are taken and looked at because they have a resistance to whatever the greys' intention, hidden agenda might be to human beings on this planet. And I think that abductees may be free of this in some kind of way. Now, if you ask me to point to the question that arises out of this, why, I think maybe somewhere along the line is sown into the genome of humanity certain very powerful factors that resist this. And maybe great beings, great kind of men in the past, their ancestral lines coming down have mixed with us all and provide, if you like, some genetic resistance to whatever extrapolation and interpolation that these greys might be doing to our genes and our genetic, our genome and so forth. And in some people who have these resistant factors, whatever they might be trying to do to skipjack their own psychologies into individuality actually doesn't work with these people. And so, therefore, you know, it's something I think the abductees ought to think about. They often think of themselves as victims, and goodness knows that a lot of them have gone into the most horrendous experiences from reading some of the accounts that are sent to me and are available and so on. They're scarred for life. But they may well be a very precious kind of mankind, something very, very special. And you know, I really do believe that when I look at all the evidence put together. It may well be that that is so. And I'm really not trying to give them a palliative in any sense. But really, this has been arrived at by looking at simple reason. Why would these things do this to some people? Why would they do these unspeakable things? And most of it a kind of sexual thing. Maybe they cannot reproduce whatever it is, halfway houses between this kind of machine type and natural living expression and so on. In other words, Pinocchio cannot become a little boy, so to speak.
Right. But so you think that part of the Grey's program that was put into them by their organic masters that they then slaughtered is to fix things. So since they made us, and they've been, you know, splicing genetically us since the beginning of what we consider human beings, if they find one of us that maybe has a reproductive problem or a digestive problem or a brain problem, they might pick us up and fix it and then throw us back down where we were.
Yeah. Well, you know, Sheena, I have to make this point. I really do not believe that they made us. We are a natural contrivance that comes from a previous type of glorious being. And as the universe progresses through the second law of thermodynamics, it actually degrades. So what I think the great teachers were trying to tell us is by a certain type of behavior, when we add we use the term good. I mean, what is good and what is bad? It's a very relativistic scale of reference, isn't it, really? It sounds ridiculous, but that's what it is. But I believe that there were two modus operandi of the power of our will that propels us. One is to bring things together, to unite, and that I would call good. And the other is to separate, to break apart, if you see what I mean. And therefore, I would call that a bad paradigm. Call it God and Satan, if you like. And so, therefore, I think these two things set together, I would expect that we as human beings, if we had a will, a compunction to do something, and if we did this in thoughts of union, making things together and so forth, we have a propulsion mechanism that takes us into an eternal scale of life. And if we do the opposite, we break up, and of course we will then dissipate and our individuality will be gone. And maybe make it easier for the greys to actually second to, so to speak. See what I'm trying to say? You see, the greys, I believe, can only exist for life. They are adapting us, if you like, for their kind of existence, heading for the only immortality they can know, a physical immortality, that according to the laws of physics is no immortality at all. It has to end one day with the cold death of the entire universe. You know, that is the final standpoint taken by cosmologists today, is that this universe will one day end in a cold nothingness. And the value of all your memories, all the wonderful things that we all feel as individuals and so on, will have no meaning at all. Well, I do not think that can be right. Not because, you know, I want to feel good about things, but quite simply, it's against reason. Why know, understand, extrapolate to reason and all of that, if one day it's all going to be valueless when the whole universe ends? And that's what the second law, physics, cosmology, the thing that most people consult these days, empirical science, is saying. Yet there were other beings that said, oh no, that's not the end. There is another way, that there is maybe another, I don't want to call it a universe, but a scale of reference where when we die we can go to, where there is an eternal tenure. And I believe that to access this you have to add and not subtract. And that people who do this, and with full summary of their will taken and coded into this line I spoke about as the soul, this information scheme that when we die, this information scheme goes on. And that death is not the end. We really do have an extension thing beyond the atom that we go to. And that is really what I'm trying to say. And that really is what's come from being a real skeptic about religion. Let me tell you, I was a real rascal, never believed a darn thing. But when I looked at the information in doing this research, I was absolutely convinced to find that this may well be possible. It came out from the figures, so to speak, extrapolated with as much reason and logic as my mind is capable of. Maybe someone will be able to, with equal reason and logic, prove it different, but they haven't done it up to now, let me tell you.
That's true. That's very, very true. You know what? And on that cheery thought, the cold, dead end of the universe, Nigel, you're awesome. Will you come and see me again? I'd love that.
I'd love to, too.
And
Thank you very much for being so kind.
Oh, Nigel, you're terrific. Where can people find you online?
Well, just simply say nigelkerner.com, and that's it. I hope it doesn't scare you too much.
No, it was awesome. Everybody, Nigel Kerner, he's just terrific. And the book is Gray Aliens and the Harvesting of Souls. So everybody, seriously, watch your ass. And I mean that literally, not just figuratively, and also figuratively.